I might be pronouncing this wrong, but they've said that you who Swami held the Bhagavatam in his palm of his hand like a myrobalan fruit, a myrobalan seed. So then I read recently that Rupa Goswami, he always used to wear a necklace of these myrobalan dried seeds or fruits.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering in general how, you know, we have sacred trees, and we have sacred trees in other traditions, like in Christianity there's the yew tree, or Celtic paganism, etc.
What's the yew tree?
Yew tree is what, it's like a
sacred form. Except for making Robin Hood's bows.
Apparently it's one of them mystical trees, and when you go to churches in England, old ones, they've all got yew trees in the graveyard area and outside the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they're considered mystical, you know, sacred.
I know that they used to keep horses away from them because they're poisonous. Berries are poisonous and they kill them. And of course, that's what they would make bows out of, long bows.
Yeah.
My bow is also yew and ebony.
So I just wondered in general about these. I mean, there's one thing that could be a stimulus for remembering God or Krishna.
What?
The trees. Uh-huh. In Vedic or in like Tulsi and or is there kind of some kind of subtle purification that just by being near them, seeing them, for humanity in general, you know, just like that kind of thing?
Let's say that there's different levels of, you talk about trees, of every living entity, but there's, for instance, the useful things, which are fruit-bearing trees. Trees that don't bear fruit are usually considered inauspicious. So from Vedic point of view, a yew tree would be useless. Prabhupada said as much about the pine trees and so on, the useless shade trees. It's maximum they give shade. There's other trees according to how useful they are besides their fruit. They have medicinal benefit, like neem, and they may have some certain powers, like ghosts won't go near a neem tree. So they're, everybody's empowered with something. Birds fly, we can't fly. So also different trees, different plants have different potencies, because they're different living entities. And then there are really, I guess there's some religious or pious living entities who have some kind of, give some religious merit. And then of course there's transcendental trees like Tulsi Devi, who are expansions of eternal associates, just like there's, they got holy rivers. The Jordan is a holy river, but whether it's, you know, what the extent of its holiness is, I don't know. I don't even know what the origin of its holiness would be. But for instance, Jamuna, Ganga are all celestial beings, bodies of transcendental beings. So same thing with trees. They're not all in the same category. And according to Sparshanam Graham Evacha, Krishna says everyone gets a certain body according to what they merit, and there's a certain type of potency that comes along with it. either which may benefit others, or in one way or another, physically, subtly, spiritually. So just like banyan tree, Krishna says, the trees are banyan tree. So banyan tree is considered to be vibhuti, but I don't know that it has any real transcendental value. Yad vibhuti mutsatvam. The Krishna says that among aquatics and the shark. So it's just a manifestation of Krishna's strength. They're not particularly religious sharks, or they don't give any religious merit. But they may have some value, like tiger's claw is supposed to be good for warding off evil. So Krishna wears a tiger's claw around his neck. And the same is there with places, rivers, mountains, trees, plants, living entities, and human beings. Everyone manifests to some degree or another some degree of power or potency. Some Srimat, Kurjika, Eva, some beauty, some power, some strength, some kind of potency. Everyone has some kind of mystic potency. There's all kinds of stones, but then there's Shalagrams, and then there's Girirajas, and there are different type of stone. The Krishna actually looks in the shape of a stone, takes the form of a stone. And then there's like Aroha, where, you know, like primitive people who actually don't have any real spiritual culture or tradition, but they just assign some divinity to things. I don't know. There's that Ayers rock in the middle of Australia, just because there's a big rock in the middle of a desert, so they worship it, whether there's any particular value or not. But it's still something. Some kind of worship is better than no kind of worship. Although it may not get the worshiper very far, but at least it gets them used to worshiping. Something else on that?
Like Nectar Devotion says, you to respect the banyan tree and something else. So that respect is kind of like it's a feeling in the mind, something that you give.
I don't know, because it's, although it says it, when you go there, you respect it because it's so wonderful. Banyan trees are so huge, and there's immediately life all around them. Parrots living in them, birds living in them, snakes living in them. They're very, very impressive, and they're Krishna, or at least they reflect Krishna's potency. But it's not like one of our sadhanas. We don't know any more than just that. Then you give respect. Then you offer pranams to something. But we don't have a sadhana for it like we do for Tulsi Devi. So therefore we don't need to really do much more than that than offer respect. You mentally offer respect, you offer pranams, and just like in India, when whenever people see an elephant, they'll offer pranams when an elephant is coming. Because it's a exhibition, nothing spiritual about elephants, but they're exhibiting Krishna's potency in terms of size and strength. You show respect, and that's what Krishna explains in the 10th chapter. This is how you become Krishna conscious, by seeing things in relationship to Krishna. And ultimately then you can, you know, there's something in a yew tree that isn't there in others, and Krishna did that, so that also helps. If we see everything, Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra, if we see things in relationship to Krishna, then that becomes our sadhana. Wherever we go, whatever we're doing, then this, it has some connection. So what's that connection, whether it's something great or beautiful or useful? Like banana tree, you got the banana leaves, the banana, you can eat the banana flowers, the banana, everything about the tree is useful. Whereas, you know, like the yew tree, you can't eat anything, but useful for something. So there's never any harm respecting anyone or anything.
Do the opulences of the material world give any pleasure to Krishna?
Well, Krishna is sometimes amazed by his own creation. Because but they're different things. It's certainly very wonderful. Krishna was also amazed by Agasura, and place in Vrindavan, or on underground, Krishna likes to sit and look at the beauty of Vrindavan, and he was very enchanted by the beauty of Vrindavan, and ultimately the Goloka Vrindavan is made to look like the material world. Everything that Krishna does is wonderful, and in one sense beauty is also in the eyes of the beholder. How much beauty we actually see depends on our attachment to something, but also depends upon our appreciation. It's like you can appreciate a tiger. People go to a zoo, or a lion, but you stay at a distance. Similarly, we should appreciate the material world energy, but keep a distance, because she's very dangerous. If you get too close, better stay at a distance.
There's this verse that says, when the living entity becomes eligible for liberation, it gets the association of devotees.
Say that again.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse says that when the living entity becomes eligible for liberation, he gets the association of devotees.
And?
So what does that mean? I mean, does it mean that all living entities will one day become eligible and get association with devotees? It's a natural evolution for the jiva. When his time comes, or does it mean something else?
Well, no, just why is it connected with all living entities? It's something that it's a conditional statement and doesn't necessarily imply that it's some kind of destiny that everyone's going to. Someone may not. Before we weren't reading about that, unless you get the association of devotees, you can't become liberated. Some kind of bhakti has to be there in order to. What kind of liberation it's talking about? I'm not sure. Okay, well, so much for the trees.